You're listening to Tahiti Dispatches, a Going to Tahiti production.
Hello and welcome to Tahiti Dispatches, Episode 6. I'm Jessica Amirati, founder and artistic director of Going to Tahiti Productions. Here at GTTP, we've been working on our latest show, Jane Austen's Persuasion, and we've taken a little break from the rehearsal grind to chat about how it's going. Sitting with me today are Laura Boltman, the adapter and stage manager of the show, and actors Dina Ann Camoli, Catherine McLeod, Costa Nicholas, Patrick Daniel Smith, Jenny Strasberg, Brad Thomason, and Ashley Wickett. 7/8 of the cast. Sadly, our last eighth, Mark Montague, couldn't be here today. So welcome to Tahiti Dispatches, guys. And to everyone out there listening, Jane Austen's Persuasion will run from June 26th through July 8th at the Secret Theater in Long Island City. For tickets, go to www.goingtotahitiproductions.com. So first off, let's go round the table and have everyone introduce yourself and the role or roles you play.
Hi, I'm Costa Nicholas. I'm playing Captain Bennick and Mr. Elliot.
Hi, I'm Jenny Strasberg. I'm playing Anne Elliot.
Hello, I'm Ashley Wickett. I'm playing Mary and Mrs. Clay.
Hi there, I'm Brad Thomason. I am playing Admiral Croft and Captain Harville.
Hi, I'm Catherine McLeod. I'm playing Elizabeth and Louisa.
Hi, I'm Patrick Smith. I'm playing Captain Frederick Wentworth.
Hi, I'm Dina Ann Camoli. I'm playing Lady Russell, Mrs. Smith, and Mrs. Croft.
I'm Laura Boltman. I'm the adapter and the stage manager.
Great. Thanks for that. So to start the interview, let's begin with Laura, our adapter and our stage manager. First off, why don't you give a quick history with GTTP?
Well, a couple of years ago, GTTP's resident choreographer, Dana Bull, told me that there was somebody, I knew her from another company that I worked with, and told me that there was a director who needed a stage manager, and I should give her a call. So Jess and I got together over lunch, and I had just come from a really miserable director experience, and so poor Jess and I sat down, and I said to her, look, this is what I think about theater, and this is how I think it should be run, and this is what I think it should be like, and she said, me too. And from then on, we've been working together. We've done, I think, 3 or 4 shows all together. And so far, it's been a really fantastic partnership.
And hopefully it will continue to be.
And it will continue on in the vein. Yes, we have survived many, many catastrophes together, so I feel we can handle anything.
Yes. And what made you want to adapt this story in particular?
Well, I was always a big fan of Jane Austen, and I liked Pride and Prejudice quite a bit. I'd read it a couple times, and then I picked up Persuasion, the novel, because I'd never read it before, and I realized about halfway through that even though nothing really exciting was happening, I really wanted to know if they were going to get together. Like, I kept turning the pages to see if it was going to happen or not, and I also really relate to Anne and the idea of you're trying to keep sane in a world full of weirdos. This comes from stage managing, guys. I'm sorry. It's true. Trying to keep in control, be the person that always got the smelling salts in her back pocket. And so I really related to that. And also, as a side note, I dated a boy in high school. We broke up, and 7 years later, we got married. So there's a personal connection there as well.
So once you got into the adaptation, what were the challenges you found both to the adaptation in general and this book in specific?
Well, one of the challenges is that Jane introduces a lot of characters, and a lot of them have similar names. Like there's Sir Walter Elliot, and then there's Mr. Elliot, who's also William Elliot, and then people call Elizabeth Miss Elliot, and they call Anne Miss Elliot, and trying to get everybody straight for the audience was a big problem, and trying to figure out which characters were absolutely necessary and which weren't. If you do know the book and you come see the show, you will notice that Louise's younger sister Henrietta is not there. Poor Henrietta has fallen off a cliff or something, and it was just too many characters. And also, I knew we were working in a restricted space, so we didn't want to have 25 people on the stage, you know, so we wanted to limit how many characters there were. And as far as the language, what I found difficult is that Jane often doesn't use dialogue, she uses narration. And so changing the narration into something that someone could say without sounding like a narrator was a very specific challenge, to make it sound natural coming out of someone's mouth.
Cool.
Is there anything particular, without giving too much away for those who haven't seen it, is there anything particular, any moment from the book that you're most looking forward to seeing in this production?
I think there are several dramatic moments that I'm interested in seeing, how we end up staging that with lights and sound and the actors, and how we make that look realistic to the audience and bring them along. But what I'm most interested, I guess, is seeing the story come to life and having the audience love these characters as much as I do. That's what I'm hoping will happen.
Great. Let's chat with the cast a bit. Starting with Jenny and Patrick, our Anne Elliot and Captain Wentworth, how are you guys enjoying rehearsals so far?
It's terrible. No, I am really enjoying it, and I have really enjoyed working with everyone in the cast. Everybody came ready to play and have a good time. I know I'm never really good at questions like this, but I am enjoying it immensely.
Cool. Yeah, me too. I mean, Jenny's a little handsy, which produces some awkward moments, I think, not just for me, but for everyone. It's been a lot of fun so far. Everybody's really easy to work with, and you've really assembled a very talented cast, and it's nice to work with other people who are passionate about what they're. When you laugh at me when I'm talking, it doesn't help. You know.
And I might add that it's a really good looking cast.
That was our prime criteria.
That's what everybody looks for in the workplace.
Attractive people.
Looks 10, act 3.
Yes.
Come see Jane Austen.
Jenny and Patrick, were you guys familiar with the book, and how has that familiarity or lack of familiarity affected your work on the play?
I love Jane Austen, and I read Persuasion probably when I was 15, so I read it again when we started working on it, and it has really helped a lot, actually, to fill in some of the things that... And there's a lot of things that kind of happen to Anne that you wonder, like, why doesn't she say anything? Because that's kind of extraordinary, or someone will say something particularly incendiary, and she just chooses not to say anything. And the book is really interesting because Jane goes into why she chose not to say anything or what she was really feeling at that moment, so... That has been really helpful for me.
I'm pretty much the exact opposite, Jenny. I'm familiar with Jane Austen and her work, but I haven't read Persuasion. I guess maybe that's a good and a bad thing. I mean, it's obviously good to understand, the root material and where things are coming from. But at the same time, if you're going to put your own tint on how you want the characters to be played, I think for me personally, it helps to not have that too much of a background, so you can actually develop some characterization that's. Hopefully unique.
Cool. Let me open the questions up to the rest of the cast. Were you guys familiar with the book or with Jane Austen's work in particular?
I, like Jenny, I had read the book a long time ago, probably in high school.
This is Catherine.
Oh, hi. Hello. I've started to sort of reread it, and I find it really useful for some of the details and again, like filling in the gaps of why things are the way they are. And I've always loved Jane Austen, and this was probably the book that I was the least familiar with, so it's been really exciting to get to know it in a different kind of way.
Anyone else?
I'm Brad. I had not read the book. But what I have found interesting is learning about the time period and the culture around, this era, and informing our characters, and the work that we're doing that way has been great, but I'm not really familiar with Persuasion. I know who Jane Austen is, though.
Yeah, it's Dina. In reference to the time period, I'm fascinated, too. I don't feel very spiritually connected with this period. I don't really feel like I understand it. I'm like a baby learning about it. And watching the films now around that period, it's such a decadent time.
and an idle time were such workaholics, and they were so idle.
Well, and I think for women in particular, like, there was a forced idleness, and I think that what's so interesting about Jane Austen's writing is that a lot of these women just are itching to do something, whatever it is, if it's writing or reading or traveling, but they're just really, it's there's kind of a decadence, but her lead characters tend to be a little bit outside of that, I think, which I've always really identified
more.
With. They want more.
Well, Anne has an interesting line near the end where she's telling Harville about love, and she says it's harder for us to get over it because we don't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. Like, all we do is sit here and think about it. Well, you guys can go off and do whatever it is, and it's easier to forget when you've got something to do.
Dude, they didn't even have movies or Ben and Jerry.
Ben and Jerry, serial kicker.
Yeah, and iPhones. Yeah, nothing.
And they were the rich folk, too.
Angry
there
Birds.
Was no there was no Facebook.
No Facebook.
I swear.
Where is Captain Wentworth? What is he up to?
What is his status? What is his status right now? What is he doing?
It's complicated.
Ashley or Costa, did you want to weigh in?
I'm familiar with Jane Austen. I hadn't read Persuasion, and it was kind of funny because I got the email about the audition, and it was like that day. And so I was like, I don't even know what this play is. So I sort of, you know, looked it up and got a very brief, or I didn't know the story. I got a very brief synopsis. And then Jess, when you said, okay, I'm going to have you read for Mary, I just sort of went for it in the biggest way possible because I really didn't know the story and I didn't really know the background. You know, I knew that she was her sister, but I think it was helpful because it was like, I'm just going to go for this. This woman is that idleness that you're talking about. She has nothing to do and she's craving so much and craving so much attention. So she, you know, fakes ill or in her mind, she believes she's ill. But so yeah, I just kind of went for it and I think that, you know, worked in my favor. And now like delving into it, I've started to read the book and it's so interesting. I've done other shows, a Turgenev, a Russian piece, and again, A Month in the Country, and it's that same thing of, like, they have nothing except everything that's going on inside their minds and then the occasional tea or the occasional party, and so all they can do is just come up with ways. They have to create everything themselves. There's nothing, there's no, you know, exterior, like we're talking about, things that are... for them to do. So what do you do? What do you do when there's nothing to do? Pretend you're deathly ill.
That's one way.
Yeah. I'm Costa. I just started book 6 of Harry Potter, so I haven't quite graduated to Jane Austen yet, but I have seen, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility movies. So, you know, I'm familiar with her work. And I've always been fascinated by this time period and, you know, the kind of manners and daily life of people. So I had kind of an idea going into it. But it was definitely something that I was very intrigued about and very interested in doing. So pretty stoked to be on board.
Why is this time period so interesting? I mean... it is to me too, but I don't know why.
I think
there's a lot of different eras that you could obviously pick material from, and for some reason this happens to be one that everybody seems to enjoy. And I,
Jane's in the public domain.
Yeah, there's that.
Throw that out. I mean, like Shakespeare's in the public domain as well, you know, and then people adapt him to all sorts of, you know, cowboy Shakespeare and all this sort of
for
stuff.
Sure.
And there's something about that Regency period. I think also all the girls look good in the dresses,
yeah,
which, and there's no corsets involved. And so I think for girls, it's like this really cool, you get to wear a pretty dress and it's comfortable and it looks good and you can drink tea and you can sort of escape from this idea of always having to do something that we have now on us to just be like, I'm just gonna sit here and worry about how strong the tea is. You know, like it's a...
I think you're leaving the men's costumes out on this one. Puffy shirts and short pants are pretty...
Well, yes, I mean,
awesome.
Those knee-highs are hot. Yeah.
Snug, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually
the tight pants. We got
we
to
like
see
the tight pants.
It's one of those eras, though.
What
where
we had to offer.
Yeah,
totally.
It's one of the only eras where the men's costumes are more restrictive and annoying than the women's.
Yeah.
I mean, you put on a dress. There's not necessarily a corset involved. You know, a little dress under that, and you're good. While the men are
buckled up to goodness knows where.
And on a more like social and psychological level too, just the mentalities and the manners and the expectations of people were just so much different than most other time periods, because you had the etiquette and, you know, the chivalry values and all that. Like when we were doing that, it was like the Bennick and Anne character work, and you were telling us about some of the
the rules
the rules of etiquette, where it was like a man and a woman who are single can only walk alone together in like the early hours, and only if they're walking to church or the park, right. Something like that. And like the man had to run up the stairs like behind the lady. I don't remember exactly what it was, but silly things like that that were just like not as prominent in earlier time periods or even later time periods. Like the early 1900s, it was dissolving, so it wasn't as strong. It was still there, but...
And I think it's interesting that the rules not just were there and followed, but that everyone knew them. Right. You know, that it was just you learned it as you grew up, and, you know, your governess taught you, or your nurse or your mom, but rarely your mom. And it's just really interesting that one of the things that I found in the working of the piece and in the research that I've been doing is that whole issue of like, okay, but would she be able to touch his arm? No, I don't think she would. Okay, how are we going to show this? Okay, so, you know, and those kinds of questions where the ease of physicality that we have in today's day and age is just not something that they had then. And so trying to choose, while Patrick is patting Catherine on the back.
Fondly,
you know, whatever.
I wasn't going to say. Like petting.
but that sense of, you know, trying to come away from the modern movement and the modern things we do without thinking, And
I think too that creates really interesting tension. There's this Joni Mitchell song about how like in the 50s you had to dance really far apart, so if you touched fingers you just exploded. And I think that it's that feeling, like if you have so many rules, they didn't have different feelings. They still felt as deeply and passionately as we do. They just weren't allowed to express it. So the tension that creates is really dramatic. And I think it makes for stories and characters that kind of, you know, you want to turn the page, you want to figure out what's going on. I think that's really exciting.
One thing that surprised me about this piece, and maybe it's just because I love comedy, is finding the comedy in this. When I thought Jane Austen, I thought, oh, this is going to be really serious, kind of melodrama. But I think we're really finding the comedy in this, which I think is wonderful. I mean, it has its dramatic elements, of course, but
yeah.
Which has been a lot of fun.
All of her humor is sort of in her narration and subdued things like the visit was perfect and being altogether too short, you know, things like that are you're like, oh, that's really witty, you know, and like that's kind of the genius of Jane. But it's hard to get people to say some of her things because they're more observational on what's happening. But yeah, one of my favorite things about Jane Austen is how much is happening that you're not necessarily seeing, for something that people may have already seen in Sense and Sensibility, when Emma Thompson is with Hugh Grant and the girl that he's engaged to, and they all know what's going on and they can't say anything about it, and you just hear the clock ticking and all three of them are sitting there and like the tension is just building and building, even though nobody's moving or talking, like the whole audience is like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And that's kind of what we're, you know, the kind of thing you want to build, like when Anne and Wentworth first see each other again in the breakfast, and Mary's, and nobody knows what's going on, and the two of them are like, you know, and that sort of moment that you can build out of feelings and not actions, I think.
Yeah, and I think I just want to say that I want to give real credit to Laura, who was just speaking, for catching that in this adaptation. There were, of course, changes that had to be made, and the poor lamented Henrietta. You know, there were characters we had to lose, but I feel that the spirit and the feeling of Jane Austen's book is really alive in this adaptation, and it's one of the things that's so exciting. So I wanted to just get your guys' opinions on how you think Jane Austen fans will react to this.
Uproar.
Uproar. All
right. Chaos in the streets.
Chaos.
Is it fair to assume that most Jane Austen fans are women, you think?
I think you would be surprised at how many. I think you would be surprised at how many male fans there are. I mean, I think yes, I think that she very much appeals to women. You know, she writes about smart, capable women in a time when they were not allowed to be smart or capable. And that's, you know, smart, witty, capable, fun, you know, like those kinds of people. And that can be a real, you know, those can be real role models to, you know, to the 13-year-old girl who reads, you know, reads Jane Austen in her bedroom. But I think that there, I see that look.
I was just curious how many 13-year-old girls you think might be attending the show.
I don't think many.
And if they do, they'll love it.
I think there's also, there are also a lot of men, you know, men like good literature too. And, you know, they're well-written books and they're intriguing. And I have had more than one occasion where I have been watching a Jane Austen movie and my husband will come into the room and he'll be like, oh no, not this again. And before you know it, he's sat down on the couch and he's watching it with me until the end. So he's going to be very embarrassed that I just revealed that. but yeah, so I think there is a real appeal for men as well. So, you know. No aliens or anything, but still. It's
fun. No sparkly vampires.
No sparkly vampires, no.
Yeah, that doesn't really appeal to men either.
Yeah. So for Dina, Catherine, Ashley, Costa, and Brad, each of you play at least two characters, and Dina, you play three. What are the challenges and the exciting aspects of playing multiple characters?
Well, for me, it's Dina. Each character holds a different status in society. And so that's an interesting thing to look at and to think about where they fit in, and also to differentiate the physicality and the vocalization, so it's clear to the audience who's who has been tremendously fun.
Yeah.
And each character interacts with, you know, the same characters. Like, they'll each speak with Anne and they each have a different opinion of her, which is very, it's interesting. And different opinions of the characters. So you get to play everything. So that's fun, really
cool.
Fun.
I think, this is Ashley. I think it's always, you know, your number one priority when you're playing multiple characters is to make sure, you know, you have them distinctly different. But also something that you've talked about from the beginning, Jess, is the way you've paired the characters. There are similarities in the multiples that we're playing. There are things about Mary and Mrs. Clay that on some level are very similar. I think with them in particular, it's this desperate need for attention in some way, and they do it. Both of these women, the way they go about it, their tactics are very different, and that's what's fun, is to discover, well, how would this woman do it as opposed to this woman, depending on her status, depending on her relationship with Anne. You know, Mary's Anne's sister, Mrs. Clay, is Elizabeth's best friend, her constant companion. So it's like figuring out what about these characters are similar, but then how do I use different tactics and use different relationships to tell the story.
Okay, so we have a new segment on the TED Dispatches called The Day Job. Basically, as our listeners are aware, most artists in New York City have at one time or even currently held down day jobs to support that artist habit we all share. I, for example, am a massage therapist and a birth doula, which I talked all about in the first Tahiti Dispatch. So I want to just go around the table and give everyone the chance to tell us in a sentence a bit about their most interesting or unusual day job. Laura?
Oh, well, mine is rather mainstream. I'm a children's librarian, so I work in a library and try and keep track of all the kids, keep them entertained, and keep them reading.
Cool.
It's Dina. I run a theater arts and education organization in Queens, so we go into the public schools and community organizations and bring theater, infuse it with the curriculum, and bring theater to children of all ages.
Cool.
This is Patrick. I've got a bit of an eclectic background. I guess my most interesting side job would have been doing, when I was in graduate school, I did research for the Center for Counterterrorism, understanding counterinsurgency theory and trying to help put that into application as far as U.S. government policy is concerned overseas.
Dude, you're totally a spy.
Oh, God.
Now he has to kill you.
Yeah. She seems so nice.
Catherine?
I work as a teaching artist, and I go into public schools, mostly in New Jersey, southern New Jersey, and also I teach ESL to adults periodically. But my most interesting, I think, day job ever was I used to work in a tuxedo store, measuring men for suits and tuxedos for their weddings.
Which was fun.
Let's try that in scene one more time.
So bad.
Well, I think some of you know this, but I'm coming out. I am also a shrink. I'm a clinical psychologist, which is my day job.
Awesome.
And I'm a doctor, and I've played one on TV.
Ashley? I work, do a couple things. I temp. I also work for a babysitting agency for artists that the goal of it is to do artistic activities with the children. Probably the most interesting thing since I moved to New York, I just got here in October, but I worked at the Holiday Fair in Grand Central Station.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Which was great fun. Dripping with sarcasm.
I'm Jenny Strasberg, and currently I've been doing this probably 4 or 5 years now. I work as a personal trainer. I specialize in pre and postnatal, but one of my more interesting jobs is that once, twice, three times a year, I work for Mattel and Fisher-Price as a representative of their brand. So sometimes I do Barbie, and sometimes I do young mom. and basically sell toys as representatives of the company. So, yeah.
This is Costa. Right now, I have the stereotypical misfortune of working in a restaurant. Although it's the first restaurant I've ever worked at that I don't despise. But my most interesting job that I ever had, which was my favorite job by far ever, was when I was in college, I was a professional pirate working at the New England Pirate Museum. It was great. $10 an hour to dress up like a pirate. Give a 20-25 minute tour that was jokes half the time just to entertain me. And it was all my friends that worked there, so when we weren't giving tours, we were hanging out, we were outside heckling tourists walking by because we were pirates and we could say and do what we wanted. There's many a good
story
about
our place.
Professional pirate. It's the last thing on my resume under miscellaneous professional pirate.
Yeah, I noticed that. Right. Got you the job.
And I'll be wearing part of the costume for this
exactly,
show.
Exactly, yes. Okay, so we are going to give the listeners a little peek into Jane Austen's Persuasion. We have a little scene that we will be doing, starting now.
Oh, you do give such dinners, Mrs. Croft.
Dear Captain, please do tell us more about your time at sea. We can look for your vessels on the Navy list. Your first was the Asp, I remember. We will look for the Asp.
Oh, you will not find her there. Quite worn out and broken up. I was the last man who commanded her, hardly fit for service then. The Admiralty entertained themselves now and again with sending a few hundred men to sea in a ship not fit to be employed.
What stuff and nonsense! Never was a better sloop than the Asp in a day. You were a lucky fellow to get anything so quickly. And the Asp, with more than 20 men applying for her.
Oh, I felt my luck, Admiral, I assure you. It was a great desire for me at the time to be at sea. Very great desire.
Naturally. What should a young fellow like you do ashore for half a year together? If a man has not a wife, he soon wants to be afloat again.
But Captain Wentworth, how vexed you must have been when you came to see the Asp, to see what an old thing they had given you.
I knew pretty well what she was before that day. She was still a dear old Asp to me. I knew that we should either go to the bottom together, or that she would be the making of me, and I never had 2 days of foul weather all the time I was at sea in her.
And then you were on the Laconia?
Oh, those were pleasant days when I had the Laconia. Oh, how fast I made money in her. A friend of mine, Captain Harville, and I had such a lovely cruise off the Western Islands together. Excellent fellow, Harville.
An excellent fellow with an excellent wife. When will you find a wife, Frederick?
Yes. Admiral, I'm quite ready to make a foolish match. Anybody between the ages of 15 and 30 may have me for the asking. A little beauty, a few smiles, and a few compliments to the Navy, and I'm a lost man.
Have you ever been to Portugal, Captain? I hear it is such a wild country.
Yes, it's once in Lisbon last spring.
Had you been there a week later, Frederick, I would have asked you to give passage to Lady Mary Grierson and her daughter.
I'm glad I was not a week later, then. I would never willingly admit any ladies aboard ship of mine.
Come, Frederick. Such lack of gallantry.
There is no want of gallantry. It is rather from feeling how impossible it is to make the accommodations on board such as women ought to have. I hate to hear of women on board, or see them on board, and no ship under my command shall ever convey ladies anywhere if I can help it.
Oh, Frederick, I hate to hear you talking so, like a fine gentleman, and as if women were all fine ladies instead of rational creatures. We, none of us, expect to be in smooth waters all our days.
What a great traveller you must have been.
I have crossed the Atlantic 4 times, and have been once to the East Indies and back again. I can safely say that the happiest part of my life has been spent aboard a ship with the Admiral. The only time I ever really suffered in body and mind, the only time that I ever fancied myself unwell or had any ideas of danger, was the winter that I passed by myself when the Admiral was in the North Seas. As long as we could be together, nothing ever ailed me.
Aye. Now, Frederick, when you've got a wife, you will sing a different tune. When he is married, if we have the good luck to live to another war, we shall see him do as you and I and a great many others have done. We will have him very thankful to anybody that will bring him his wife.
Aye, that we shall.
Now I have done. When married people begin to attack me with, oh, you think very differently when you're married, I can only say, no, I shall not. And then they say again, yes, you will. And there is an end of it.
Oh.
Great, thank you guys for giving us a little glimpse into Jane Austen's persuasion. Okay, in order to make sure that there is an actual show on June 26th, I'm going to play the part of the strict director and get us back to rehearsal. Thank you all so much for taking the time to sit down and talk to us here on the Tahiti Dispatches. For you folks out there, a couple of pieces of business before we finish up for the day. Going to Tahiti Productions has had some exciting developments since the last podcast. First up, GTTP was chosen to participate in this year's New York International Fringe Festival, which runs from August 10th through the 26th in various Manhattan venues. We don't have our specific performance dates or location yet, but we will be performing a version of our first show, In the Ebb, written by Camilla Amorati, during the festival. As soon as we know the dates, you will too, so keep checking the website. And our other exciting development, GTTP has been awarded its first grant. Huge thanks to the Puffin Foundation for supporting our winter show, Within Arm's Reach, which will be an original stage adaptation of the novel of the same name by Anne Napolitano. It's been a thrilling couple of months on our little island, and I wanted to share it all with you. As I've mentioned, Jane Austen's Persuasion opens on June 26th and runs for 14 performances at the Secret Theater, a space familiar to our regulars. Although we've performed 3 shows before at The Secret, for the first time we'll be in The Little Secret, a great 50-seat black box that is part of the Secret Theater complex. Tickets and details for Persuasion are available now at www.goingtotahitiproductions.com. Keep in mind, seating is limited. I did mention there are 50 seats, which for our production is actually only 44 seats. And those Jane Austen fans are pretty hardcore, so get your tickets now before they're gone. Finally, an episode of the Tahiti Dispatches would not be complete without my final plug. Join us on the interwebs. We've got the website, the podcast, the blog, the Facebook, and the Twitter, so please read, listen, subscribe, like us, and follow us in all of those locations. And if you haven't already, become a part of the GTTP family. Sign up for our mailing list on our website and keep up to date on all the company happenings, of which there will be many in the next few months. Also, stay tuned for our next podcast when we talk about our fringe production of In the Ebb. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again to Laura Boltman and the cast of Jane Austen's Persuasion for being with us today. Back to rehearsal for you, and to all you folks out there, we will see you at the theater.